Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Osher Ginsburg podcast. I'm Osher Ginsburg. This episode is 132 of the show with Jane Liu. She is the founder and CEO of Shopo, or co-founder and CEO of Shopo. You can find her online at Twitter and Instagram. Her handle is The Lazy CEO. Wonderful human being, fantastic story. Can't wait to share it with you. This show is brought to you by the extraordinarily wonderful people who have supported the show through Patreon, patreon.com/Osher. Thank you very, very much for supporting the show. If you like the show and you'd like to put a little into the show each month to help me make the show, for as little as $5, you can get access to exclusive episodes. This week's episode is with Charlie Clawson. It's a sequel to the former chat that he and I had. Charlie Clawson, of course, is one half of TOEFOP with Will Anderson. And Charlie and I have a great conversation about all kinds of things, including a project that we were working on together that failed. Because, you know, people may look on telly and go, wow, everyone says yes to those people. But for every yes you hear in the business that I'm in and Charlie is in, you hear 500 no's. So he and I talk about a project we were working on that we were quite deep into that ended up not going forward, and we discussed that. So if you want to hear that, support the show for as little as $5 a month, you can get access to that. And there are grades of rewards that go up from there. Thanks to everyone that heard the Alice Fraser podcast. That was a lot of fun. And thanks to everybody that had some feedback about the Craig Bruce show. Craig Bruce is a hell of a guy in the radio industry, and I'm really grateful that people outside the radio industry were able to get something from that, especially the stuff that he talked about adoption. That was very, very kind of him to share that with us. I'm very, very grateful because, you know, I've known the guy for 20-something years and I've never heard that story, so that was very, very sweet. You can always email me, sendoshiremail@gmail.com. That's where you can find me to check in, let you know where I am. I'm in the back of a car right now. I've stopped driving from place to place so I can get work done in between things, because I'm very grateful to be so busy at the moment. But being so busy means that if I want to spend any valuable time with my family, I have to, but if you live in Sydney, you know that if you drive into town for a meeting and you park your car, it's going to be $35, but I can Uber in and out for 12 each way. So I can get an Uber and I can work and do emails and do phone calls while I'm on the way, so that's kind of what I'm doing. Thanks to the people that support on Patreon, I can get someone else to put the show together, which makes sure that I'm able to get a show to you each and every week, because I frankly would not be able to do it without the help of people that are supporting the show. But yeah, I'm super busy, which is great. It's the Logies weekend. By the time you hear this, I would have done the Logies last night. I hope you enjoyed the show. I don't know if we won or not. We might have, we might not have. Congratulations to whoever did win. I'm sure you had a great show. It's always fun to go to that show, but I'm looking forward to it. Obviously, I have no idea what's going to happen on the night. So how good was Delta? Wasn't she great? And stuff. That's how funny were Hamish and Andy? They were amazing. How good did Sam Frost? I'm just making all this up. Had a landmark day today. I haven't talked about this on the radio, but Gigi was getting ready for school, and she came into my office and says, I left my school shoes in Mum's car. I said, oh, what are we going to do? She's like, well, I can't go in my regular school uniform with the tunic and everything with my school shoes, with my sports shoes on, so I'll have to wear my sports uniform. And I said, well, are you going to get in trouble? She says, yes. Should I write a note? She says, yes. And so today I wrote my first note to the teacher ever. It was pretty awesome. It was really, really cool. Yeah, I'm very stoked about that. That was a good moment. That was a good moment. Had a good night the other night at the Rafa store. It's a nerdy cycle thing that happened the other night with Zwift, ZWIFT.com. It's a massive multiplayer online game involving bicycles. And there was a big meetup in the middle of Sydney with about, I don't know, it was about 200 people in there at one stage, and there were world champions there, and there were people racing in a virtual world. It was super cool, but yeah, it was really evident that, yeah, when I'm in a crowded room full of people and I don't really know anyone, I just sat alone on a stool and just kind of waited till I had to do my MC thing, because I didn't really talk to anyone because I'm, you know, still kind of freaked out by being in rooms full of people that I don't know. I'm not really that great at saying hi to people I don't know. And yeah, just kind of gripped my teeth. And it was all right in the end, though. Once I got on the mic, it was fine. But yeah, to stand in a room full of 200 people and feel alone, nah, something I just live with. Yeah, I mean, I love Shane. Shane's awesome. Steve. Shane was there. Shane's the Aussie Zwift guy, but Steve Beckett, the UK guy, who's coming on the podcast soon, actually, he invited me to come along. He wanted me to get there a bit early, so I got there a bit early, and I thought, well, he's getting me half an hour early. So I said, when are you starting? He goes, oh, an hour and a half will kick off. Now, normally I engineer things so I turn up about 20 minutes before I have to do something, because I'm pretty bad at standing in a room alone in a packed room. So, it was a tricky hour and a half. I'll give you that for nothing. Anyway, I better get on with the show. This show today is, well, let me tell you about my guest. Jane Liu is a very successful businesswoman out of Sydney. She grew up in Beijing. In fact, she heard what went down at Tiananmen Square back in the day. She was that close to what happened, and her parents and her got out of there about 4 or 5 years later, and she tells a pretty fantastic immigrant story. And in this election year, and certainly with the triumph of Trump happening over in the States at the moment, I think it's super important to remember what role immigrants do play in our society, and what role people who aren't white and people who aren't men play in our society, because she is a shining beacon of someone who came here with nothing and has built an absolute empire. She's a fantastic woman to be around. She's just full of energy. And she created the very successful online retail business. Originally they were Show Pony, then they became Showpo. I first met her last year at a function, and I couldn't quite get over this table that she was at, just radiating with super powerful feminine energy, and everyone looked fabulous, and it was pretty great. But she talks a lot about quitting here, which I think is a very important thing to do, is to quit if something you're doing isn't working. And she also talks about lying to her parents for up to 2 years while she built her business, because, you know, she's quite open about the heavy, heavy, heavy expectations placed upon her. You know, she's, you know, the first, she's the kid of the immigrant family. They want their kids to do well. So she really brings that story to the fore, and I can't thank her enough. So there's a lot to relate to in this show. Oh, wow, I'm in traffic and I've pulled up next to an undercover cop car and it's a Camry. I had no idea they did that. Oh, that's interesting. Anyway, you can find her online. She's the Lazy CEO on both Twitter and Instagram. But if you like the show, please drop her a tweet. Let her know you heard her. Jump on her Instagram. Let her know you heard her. That always helps when you let a guest know that you liked them on the show. That gives them a bit of a thrill. It makes me look good. So please, thank you. Anyway, enjoy this conversation with Jane Lou.
Thanks so much for coming over.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm glad you could be here. Yeah. Where's your office in Sydney?
In the city. It's actually so nice to get out.
Yeah. What, in the CBD?
Yeah.
All right.
We have this like rooftop building. It's very, all the other floors look like accountants' offices. Yeah. And we have this giant rooftop balcony where we have good parties. It's really nice.
Oh, good. Oh, that was. Yeah. I'm glad you could come over. But I'm glad we met at the Stella Fella Ball.
Yeah.
Last year, and yeah. I remember that you were just surrounded by this table of impossibly talented and well dressed and beautiful and smart women.
Yeah, that's our Shoho team.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I was really fascinated, you know, kind of find out about your story. So, you know, I'm very, very interested to have this conversation with you. But we are actually a very long way from where you grew up, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm from all the way from China, in Beijing. Came when I was 8.
Yeah. What do you remember about growing up there?
I used to get in trouble a lot because China is really strict. So, for example...
Is or was?
Oh, it probably still is, but it definitely was. So I had year one there. I went to year one there, and you have to sit... Everyone has their individual desks, and you have to sit with your hands behind your back so you don't fiddle with your stuff on your desk. And then I come to Australia and we're sitting on the floor with our legs crossed. I've never done that before. And then we have group desks. Never had that before. We had nap time. I was like, what the hell? And I was like, I remember just lying there being like, really? Like just with one eye open being really like, are we just sleeping right now? And in China, like when you play sports, you're playing, you know, softball, all these team sports, cricket in China. And funny story is I went back to China earlier this year with my dad to visit my primary school, and it's still actually like that. You run behind each other in a straight line and there's a teacher with a whistle. This is year one.
And that's
exercise.
Sport. That's exercise.
Yeah.
So you're not side to side, you're not talking to each other.
No.
Wow. So that culture of individual.
Yeah.
Individuality. Now, is it, was it, you know, one child policy era that you
grew
up in?
Yeah, it was.
Whoa.
Yeah, it really sucked. Like my parents definitely wanted to have more kids. And I think it was like 1980 or whatever it is. So all of my friends also didn't have siblings.
So it wasn't anything different that you knew of.
And you grew up very close to your friends and your cousins. But I mean, I love, like, I look at families here that have like 3 or 4 in them. I'm so jealous.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's you know,
so different.
I wonder a lot about, you know, to speak of that there's an entire generation. I mean, you'd think as a kid you might have figured out when it comes to things like sharing.
Sharing, yeah. I actually, I have been told, I'm not just thinking this, that I'm quite good at sharing. People are surprised how good I am at like sharing and just like including people for an only child. I'm always like making sure there's no one left out, but also how much I can just like neg on people and tease people. Like everyone assumed I would have a younger or older brother the way I tease people.
Uh-huh.
And I just like, yeah, torment friends sometimes, but yeah.
So what did your folks do?
My parents are not entrepreneurial at all. My mom works in the bank. My dad's a computer engineer.
So that's what they were doing in China?
Yeah. And then they came here and they worked as cleaners, worked in factories.
Oh, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. So you are old enough that when 1989 rolls around, That you would have been old enough to kind of understand that, wow, something's really interesting happening. There's people gathering in the streets. This is all really exciting.
Yeah.
Like, what was that like, the build up to, if you were, you were in Beijing, you were close enough to Tiananmen Square.
Yeah. We could actually hear it because we live 5 minutes away.
Right.
But actually, I knew nothing. And
really?
I knew nothing until much later on when I came to Australia.
Really?
Because you don't.
What did your parents tell you? I mean, obviously the sound of 100,000 people screaming and fleeing.
No, well, China has fireworks anyway, right? Ah. China is very loud.
So you thought the gunshots were fireworks?
Yeah. And I think my dad even went down to the front line because China was so safe, and that's why they had gunshots, because there's never any protesting. Like, people, like, the, because China was such a safe place before that, people didn't actually have, the cops didn't have, what do you have, like pellets and like tear gas, and they didn't prepare for those things. And all they had, they didn't have the police to fight everyone off. They had to bring the army because that's all they actually had.
They didn't have any non-lethal options.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's, I mean, that's what I've been told. But there's just, there's a lot of secrecy. Like, people there still don't think know the full story. Like, even now, like, if my parents honestly heard me talk about it, they would feel very nervous.
Why?
Just in case, like, I don't know.
Well, I guess they grew up underneath it.
Yeah, like, in case, like, there's trouble for me if I go back to China.
Right, right.
Yeah, like,
but you've talked about it in interviews before. This is what I'm asking you about. Yeah. You know, it's not like you haven't spoken about it before.
Yeah. But, I mean, we went back this year. They made me really nervous. So.
But I'm just wondering, like, what do you tell your kids? Like, did your parents know what was happening?
They did, but they didn't, like, honestly, people still think Chairman Mao is a great person. And they just don't realize he's responsible for more deaths than Hitler. So,
yeah, it wasn't awesome.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't very good.
Yeah.
For a lot of people to try and lurch a society that huge,
yeah,
culturally forward a couple of hundred years,
yeah,
in 1,000 days or whatever you tried to do it in.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
And just, like, was not well thought out. Like, why didn't he have an economist there? Like,
so was it that the tipping point for your folks? Did they go, oh, we better get this kid out of here?
I think everyone wants to go overseas for a brighter future, but it's definitely a catalyst. Yeah.
Did they have a hard time, you know, finding a way out? Were there other countries they considered?
Yeah, absolutely. It took, I think, 5 years. We came in 94. We tried Australia, then America, then Canada and New Zealand, and then I think got pushed back, so we tried Australia again. And yeah, so we managed to get through here. I think we've just got one relative here, and that's.
And it was through that relative that you managed to find it. Wow.
Yeah.
That's so full on.
Yeah.
You know, I guess, you know, when my mum came here, you know, they just got off a boat.
Yeah.
You know, they came from the American part of that Germany had been carved up, and they'd fled into Germany from Lithuania. And, you know, so therefore they had access to the evacuations that were going in that direction.
Yeah.
And it was the US or it was the UK or it was Australia. And my grandfather went, let's go to America. And they went, nah, your kid's got a cough. It's probably TB. And went, great, we'll go to Australia.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was it. So it wasn't like, but they were white.
Yeah, so different. Yeah, they were.
Which is what I tell everybody.
At least we came on a plane. I know actual boat people that came, like, this Vietnamese girl, her parents came on the boat, so.
And my mum's a boat person.
Yeah.
My mum came on a boat.
Yeah.
And my joke is, I say it all the time, is I wasn't born in Australia. I'm an immigrant, but I'm white, so no one cares.
Yeah.
It's just true. It's so true.
Yeah.
What are your, so the you're just going on as planned, you're going to school and this, what is that? There's so many things I want to ask about growing up in China and how that forms you, because I've got this 12-year-old girl that is my soon-to-be stepdaughter, right? Mm. And I'm seeing every day the stakes of my behaviour around her form her opinion of how males in their life should behave or whatever. And so you're in the school that's, you know, forcing you to be extraordinarily obedient, very, very individualized.
Mm.
What does that do for a culture as far as caring for each other and you know, having compassion for people in the community? Does that still happen?
I mean, it's surprising that there is actually a class that teaches you how to be a good, like, citizen.
Really?
Things like you get taught, you know, give an old senior person a seat on the bus. Like, I actually remember that. But if you go to China, it's not – people rush to get off the bus. And then they're pushing each other to get off a bus and then they're just walking normal pace. Like, why are you rushing? Why are you pushing people? Like, if you don't – if you're in China and you're not pushing in the line, you actually just slowly fall behind. Like, you actually have to constantly nudge into a line just to keep up – like a queue, I mean. Yeah. Like, it's
is that a metaphor
weird.
For no, the rest of the society?
No. Oh, maybe, yeah. But I don't know. It's a weird culture. And, like, you know, in terms of, like, what your parents teach you about, you know, relationships – you're not meant to have – it's the craziest thing. Like, you're not meant to have a relationship until you finish studying and then you get a job and all of a sudden you're meant to have kids. Like, where does the courting happen? Where does learning about what a good relationship or who your ideal partner is? Like, I don't know when that's meant to happen.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So you get off the plane. Isn't that wild? Like a 12-hour flight, 11-hour flight.
Yeah, yeah.
And you landed in Sydney?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember the day?
20th of Feb, something like that, 1994. Like,
so summer, hot, yeah. Stinky.
And, oh, my God, the skies are blue. And I was like, what the hell? This is crazy. The clouds are fluffy and just like I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah, my brother works in Shanghai. He sends me photos all the time. He goes, this is a clear day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, surprisingly, I actually really – I had really bad hay fever. And it's because of all the nature in Australia. Like, right now this eye is, like, a bit swollen.
Do you want some Claritin? I've got some antihistamine. Do you want some?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll get you some. Yeah,
oh. Yeah. No, no. Can we fine. Just... Oh, awesome.
No, we'll just keep rolling.
Yeah, yeah.
No, look, it's important. No, because my fiance, again, you know, she's a Fijian.
Ah, cool.
If you didn't grow up...
With all the pollen,
if you didn't grow up with this kind of stuff...
Is it non-drowsy?
You don't quite... Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know how the non-drowsy and cup of coffee will go.
Yeah, yeah. This is great. You know, myself up.
Yeah, it'll work.
Wait, is it one or two? One.
Read,
oops.
Read the pack.
No, I took two out. I'll just...
There you go.
Waste one, sorry.
No, that's fine. Pop one back in there. There you go. Hopefully that'll kick in.
Thank you.
Hey, no worries. Need help.
Yay, so okay.
We've got everything here. Everything here.
Going to hear me clearer.
Bondi Towers. You know,
yeah, let me hear a difference.
So you got, you arrived February 22nd, 1994.
Yeah.
And did you go to your relative's house? Is that where you went?
Yeah. And so they lived in Balmain and now, so we lived in Balmain and then.
Which
is
a fairly nice part of Sydney.
It's really nice. And I was the only foreigner at school. So we had some Eastern European girl, but for me, like, that's just white. I couldn't tell the difference.
And how was your English?
Terrible. I couldn't say anything. I couldn't. And I've said this story before, and people actually don't believe me, but I literally could not go to the bathroom on the first day of school. Like, the school was a bit old. It wasn't a conventional looking toilet. There was no sign. And I just didn't know where the toilets were. And I was just really shy and timid. Didn't want to just barge into random rooms. I tried to gesture, but apparently my charades is not very good. So I had to just, I was just dreading. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to pee myself on the first day of school. What do I do? And then what saved me was the fact that in Australia, school finishes at 3. I thought it was going to finish at 5 or 5:30 in China. So the day was done. And I was like, okay, I'm going to run home and just pee. So it actually worked out. If it was 5:30, it would have been traumatic. But
and so as the only foreign kid at an all-white school,
yeah,
I'm sorry in advance, in retrospect, for whatever names people called you. I'm sorry.
Oh, I may have not even, to be honest, everyone was so friendly. The only person who was rude to me was this Aboriginal girl.
Right.
And we became friends in a couple of years. She was in year above, so I think people in year above tease you as well. But it was this Aboriginal girl who was teasing me a lot, and then, but yeah, we got along and made amends. And then,
well, I guess if it's your country and then it's full of white people, you go, oh, Jesus, and then more people are like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, even weirder looking people.
Eventually you're going to be like, come on, man.
Yeah. And then, oh, actually, I remember we had this school assembly where the teacher was like, this is where my English got a bit better. They were like, oh, you know, this teasing shouldn't, like, this bullying shouldn't go on, like, we're aware of this mass bullying, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, my God, people have been talking about me behind my back.
Whoa.
And I was like, wow, I didn't even realize. And then they kept going on and they're like, this person's now leaving the school. And I was like, what? So it was a German kid.
Wow.
Who people were making, and I feel like a Philistine, but I did not know about, even know about like
World War
Hitler
II.
Back then. Yeah, no. World War II back then. I was like, it was probably like, yeah, you just very,
yeah.
I don't know. So I just didn't even know why they were racist to this other white kid. And I just, and I thought it was me. And I just thought, oh, thank God it wasn't me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to ask her a stupid, stupid
no, go.
Round eye question.
No stupid question. I love it, round eye.
How do you, I don't know how, I know the gaijing is the word in Japanese. What's the word?
Oh, guilao. Guilao.
Guilao.
It means like white ghost. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Like gringo.
Yeah. Guilao. Yeah, it's gringo. Did I say it right?
Yeah, that's yeah, good.
The good Hawaiians call it haole.
Oh.
And the Fiji, the islanders call it, what's a falangi.
Falangi.
Yeah, falangi. It basically means okay. It's like stupid white man.
You need to know that so you can hear it.
Oh, like but it's also I recognize very, very much my white male privilege and that I was born middle class and white and a male and straight. So, So what is – oh, God, where was I going with this? It was really good too. oh, God, what were we talking about? Oh, yeah. Here comes my – I forgot it already. What's the word again?
Guilao.
My Guilao question.
Yeah.
When do you select your English name?
Oh, I some teacher did it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So a teacher named you?
Yeah.
I got to name myself.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's
a whole other story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wasn't born Osher.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So, but you got to, a teacher named you.
Well,
your teacher just picked a number.
Well, name. It sounded like my Chinese name, which is Jin Jin. So it kind of sounded like Jane.
Uh-huh.
So they just went Jane. I was like, okay, sure.
Jen Jen?
Yeah.
What, Jenny couldn't – Jennifer?
Yeah.
It's not hard.
Maybe – oh, it's probably too many syllables to pronounce for a Chinese person. My mom can't say my name. She says Jen. She can't say my boyfriend's name, James. She's like, Gemma, sir. And, like, my dad's name is Frank because it's just, like, there's all these weird ways to rule things out. Like, Robert sounds like carrot, and apparently he thought – he wanted Max, but too many dogs were called Max. We met, like, two dogs called Max or something. Like, it's just – it's really arbitrary. But then you meet some people who's some like Asian kids and their names are like, I can't, oh, like.
All I know is that
like
my.
Like those grand names. Like, where did you come up with
my
this?
Double bass teacher when I was 16, he was Jackie.
Yeah.
And his mate was Jackie and all his mates were Jackie. I'm like, oh, because you came here and you. Jackie Chan.
Yeah, yeah.
We're all called Jackie.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So a teacher name.
Yeah.
Wow. That's wild, man.
Yeah.
That as well. And so
I don't like it.
My grandparents did the very same thing to what your parents had to do is that they have these careers that were, you know, quite high profile and they get here and they're like, sorry, we don't recognize your degree. I apologize. You can go and clean that toilet.
Yeah.
So how did your folks deal with that?
I think it was just, they're very like, okay, we've got this goal of our kids, education and brighter future in mind and just keep that, like they just use that to motivate them. So they would, I remember they were telling me they're at the warehouse and they're packaging and they're like, okay, so that's like Jane's lunch for the week. Okay. That is after school care. Okay. This is rent. Like they're just like using what they're
reframing
paying.
Reframing.
Yeah. Just to give it context. Like it's not demeaning what they're doing. This is paying for this. This is paying for that. And that got them through it.
Wow.
Were
they eventually able to find a path more aligned to their training?
Yeah, my mum went back. She's now working. She's not working anymore, but she was working for the bank of ICBC, Industrial Commercial Bank of China, which is where she used to work in China. And then my dad's working for a small engineering company that's very they're like a little family. It's a small business. So they've treated him really well. So it's worked out quite well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What can you help people listening understand about the expectations placed upon the single kid?
Oh, my God.
Particularly of parents who've given up everything.
Yeah, so my parents are, like, so liberal for Asian parents. Like, they used to – their friends – before I go into it, like, their friends used to tell them that you're letting your child run wild and free. You're crazy. Like, you're letting her go out. You're letting her drink. You're letting her have boyfriends. Like – this is going to come and bite you in the ass. And they were just like, you're like, just travel. And then, so one of her friends, for example, her daughter didn't get into a selective school in year six for year seven. And she made her repeat year six.
Far out.
Like, imagine in your adolescence when you're 12, having to stay back. All your friends are off to high school. You stay back a year just for that one selective school exam. Like, that's just
wow.
Terrible parenting. Like, who thought, you know? And just people were just not allowed to, like, have sleepovers and, like.
So you didn't have any of that?
No, I did. So
oh,
I
that's
was
cool.
Like, oh, I just, like, I lied a lot. I just did it. We used to live, so when we moved out of Balmain, we moved out west to buy a house to kind of accumulate a bit more wealth. So we can, and also have a house. But I would just say at girlfriends' houses a lot because my parents would let me go to parties, which is already unheard of for a lot of Asian families. And then I just go and stay with my boyfriend. So,
how old were you?
Like, oh no, like 15, 16.
That's 3 years away, Jane.
Yeah. I think you just got to like have open communications, not too much, but you want them to be able to confide in you.
Okay, so your parents don't know that you're going to go stay with your boyfriend.
No.
Are they able to talk to you at all about sex or safe sex? Where did you learn all that?
Oh, school, friends. Yeah, okay. TV. No idea. Last time I asked them, I would have been like 12 or 13, and they told me, because I was like, why do I look like, I look so much like my dad, but I came out of you. And she's like, oh, you know, when you sleep in the bed with someone long enough, that's what happens. And that's what I believed.
Crikey.
Yeah. And then,
because, you know, you hear horror stories about parents that don't talk to their kids and refuse to speak to their kids about it. And then 15, boom, pregnant.
Yeah.
And then they're so religiously conservative. They're like, well, clearly you're going to have the baby now.
Yeah.
Like, well, then what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, my views are my views and, you know, my firsthand experience shapes those views.
Yeah.
However, I think the idea of not speaking to your kids about it at all or talking to them about contraception or
something. Although you're the person to turn to, like, that they can trust to speak to about it.
Well, yeah, you'd want them to at least kind of know what their value is and know what, especially now. I mean, what did I read the other day? That girls as young as 13 are feeling so much pressure to return pics of their boobs.
At least you're a cool dad. My dad's not cool. So
I'm not a dad. I'm trying to be a stepdad. I'm still about a year. About 9 months till we get married.
Yeah,
so
okay,
I'm still mum's fiance.
Yeah.
At this point, I don't know. You know, I just.
Cool father figure.
I just see so much pressure upon kids just a little bit older than her to be so hypersexualized.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And it freaks me out.
Yeah.
And I don't know how I can equip her to deal with, say there's a boy who's a few years older that she's really, really into and then three texts into it, she gets a dick pic.
Yeah.
What's she supposed to do? You know? Because as far as he's concerned, that's what everybody talks about. That's the thing you're supposed to do.
Yeah. Oh, that blows my mind how that's happening at such a young age and like the things that they're exposed to. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. So even the fact that obviously clearly your subterfuge must have got fairly skilled if you were able to stay over at boyfriends' houses.
Yeah, I
what was your trick?
My parents are so trusting. So like even they just like I used to be able to convince them to let me drink because I was like, when I was 18, because I was like, next year I'm going to go work at KPMG. And there's, you know, in Australia, there's a big drinking culture. Now, I don't want to be that person who has one drink and passes out in front of her bosses. So you should just let me practice. And then I got away with that. So they could let me drink. And so, yeah, I don't know. Actually, with my ex-boyfriend, my parents tried to set me, while I was going out with my ex-boyfriend for 2 years, my parents took me to like a family blind date set up with this Asian boy because they were like, I think you should date an Asian boy. So, so my boyfriend's Aussie ass.
And how, what's he doing? What's that boy doing?
Yeah.
Can you get him off that? If that's all right.
Frankie,
I love you, but this is a vintage Parker table. Uh-huh. You're not allowed to chew the vintage furniture, please.
It's
the first dining table I've ever bought that's not from IKEA.
Oh, well, it's actually, so no, nice. It's I see you're being very careful with the coasters. It's great.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And these are – it's like my first big boy furniture.
Yeah.
These are original 1945 Herman Miller Eames chairs.
Nice. How nice is it to not have to build it?
Well, so I'm sort of bragging about my furniture. Okay, so all through high school, are they on your case or is it just a given that you are going to study? Did you work? Did you find it easy to work? Did you have to work hard to meet their expectations?
No. So my parents are pretty, like, they're actually pretty car fast when it comes to all that. Like, so my mom's best friend would take, for her daughter, she would take every exam paper and then go through all, every question that she does wrong and then revise it with her daughter.
Mm.
The plus side is her English is way better than my mom's English. My parents just, they stopped looking at my report cards because I was always just getting, like, I never had to fake report cards. I was actually a lot harder on myself than they were. They actually just wanted me to, like, be above average and just work in upper middle management, just be safe and just have, like, a safe, solid
then boom, career. Get married. Boom,
yeah, exactly,
babies.
And have kids. Yeah. They didn't want me, they didn't have, like, too high aspirations.
Okay.
Yeah. So they weren't that pushy.
Right. Yeah. But you were quite hard
I'm
on yourself.
I'm more ambitious than they are, so.
Yeah. Where did that come from?
I don't know. I think maybe it skipped a generation. My grandparents on my mom's side are quite ambitious.
Right.
People weren't hardworking, I think. I don't know.
And so you said, was university always the thing that you were
going to
do?
It was without a question. Like, yeah. You would never even consider not going to university. Like, it would seem like you failed if you didn't go to uni, if you didn't get a job.
Mm.
Like, you just never consider it as a, you know, being an actor or, like, working in a career that didn't need a university degree. Like, it just didn't seem like an option.
Mm.
Like, you don't – also, I think, you know, if you have a positive role model that has done that, then you can be a bit more motivated in doing that. But – we don't know anyone like that either.
Mm.
So it just, you know.
And what did you go and study?
I studied commerce, accounting and finance, which is what every single Asian kid studied at UNSW. Seriously, you can just predict it.
Frankie agrees. Every single. You keep saying Asian, but I'm guessing you mean mostly Chinese.
Chinese. I'm generalizing. I hope I don't get hate mail for this.
Oh, no, that's why.
It's a good crowd.
Audrey calls herself Eurasian.
Oh.
Because she's Indian, Samoan, Chinese, Fijian.
Wow.
With a bit of Scottish, English, Welsh.
That's such a cool mix.
Yeah, she calls herself Eurasian. She's kind of brown. She's kind of Eurasian.
Yeah.
She's Eurasian.
I don't like it.
So there's no whiteies in your course?
Right, like, not many. Yeah.
Why is it such a popular – is it just because that's like this is the cornerstone of I don't know, modern commerce is a cornerstone of capitalism? If I get this stuff right, I can go anywhere?
Yeah.
Right.
And I think it's like for people who don't – if you don't want to do med – which is the other obvious option.
If you're that smart.
Yeah, if you don't do med, you do commerce.
Right.
For the record, I did get the marks for med, but I can't deal with blood.
Fair enough. Now, they said you got a cadetship.
At KPMG.
So you're quite young. How do you even apply for that sort of thing? And why did you know you wanted to go there?
Oh, because my mom, so she doesn't like, she doesn't brainwash me like I would have thought, but like I've literally up until this point did everything that she wanted because I didn't know any better and I genuinely did want to do it myself. It wasn't like, oh, I actually want to be a muso and she forced me into doing it. I actually didn't know any other options. I think I always actually wanted to get into media. If you ask anyone, I'm not just saying this, my dream job if I wasn't doing this would be to produce reality TV shows. But and I've said
you
that
and
so
I,
many
you
interviews.
And I should talk because I think you're in a fairly ripe, fertile ground for that sort of thing.
Yeah.
We should put something together.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Oh, I would. Anyway, because it's like TV is my – people think fashion – I have a passion for fashion, but honestly, like TV brought me up. It's what my I do in almost any of my spare time. But anyway, so what was my point?
I was asking about KPMG.
KPMG. This is the typical, like, adolescence of an Asian immigrant or just, yeah, Asian, maybe even Indian immigrant as well. So you go through junior primary school and you try and get to OC class, which is an opportunity class in some of the primary schools. So I didn't get into that because I just had 2 years of learning English. And then you try and get into selective school, which I did get into. And then all you care about is your university mark.
Audrey did that. Which you got in a selective school.
Yeah. And it's so, I don't like it at all. It's so competitive and it's just, it's not a good place. It's not a good culture. But somewhere during my high school, my mom was like, oh, I have a friend who went to a selective high school. So you should I lost my train of thought. Who worked at KPMG.
Hold up.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So you should do that. And I was like, what do you mean, like, work at KPMG when you were 18. She's like, yeah. No, that's all I heard about. And then one day the opportunity did come out that there is a cadetship you can do straight out of high school. And so that's literally what I focused myself on. And so midway during year 12, you go for a series of interviews and group interviews. And yeah, I'm so sorry.
That's right. You sound like you're running a multi-million dollar business. Yeah. Your phone's going to ring.
And then got the job at KPMG. And,
which is a big fancy investment bank.
It's an accounting firm.
Big fancy accounting
but
firm.
It's one of the big fours. And I actually loved it because I never had, I think it, I became more myself. I came out of my shell a lot more when I was working at KPMG. And I'm really glad that I started working when I was 18 because I found out much sooner that I hated it. So that was good.
So but you're doing that and uni?
Yeah, so part-time uni at night.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Where did you find time for the boyfriend?
Oh, no, made time. My boyfriend at the time lived across from uni, so that was good.
I'm just going to uni, Mum.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know it's Saturday.
Yeah.
Late lecture.
Studious. Yeah.
Overnight study group.
Got detention. They still have that? Yeah.
So do you remember the day that you're like, oh, I can't do this. This isn't what I want.
Yeah, I actually do very, very vividly. So I just, after 2.5 years.
Because I'm fascinated with people who quit. I've quit a bunch
of stuff.
You just
did it. Yeah,
I've quit a bunch of stuff.
Are you a good quitter? Are you like a dramatic, like, I'm out of here.
That's how I do it. I just realized that the amount of energy I'm spending trying to keep myself sane in a particular space is more than I would be expending if I wasn't in that space.
Yeah.
And that's worth more to me than cash.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's great. And I just think so many people don't realize that. That's actually really good. That's, yeah.
If you've got to work every day, so don't go nuts.
Yeah.
To just go do your job, you may want to think about it.
Exactly.
Where you're working.
Yeah.
So what did you catch a train into work? What do you remember what you was going on that day? Were you sitting there on a train going, this is it, I can't do it?
I was behind my laptop and then I looked at my phone and I was like, wow, it's been 3 hours. And I was like, I'm literally 3 hours more dead. I'm actually 3 hours more dead than I was. And all I've done that time is I've removed the circular referencing from this spreadsheet.
What's that?
It's like when one cell talks to another, but it's kind of like contradicts each other. And then one cell relies on another. It means the whole spreadsheet kind of has a breakdown and you fix it and it all flows. And who gives a shit, right? Yeah, exactly.
I'm 3 hours more dead.
Yeah, and I've just removed the circular
reference. And for what?
Exactly. And so I was like, wow, I can't do this. I can't just like, I was like, I'm going to go get a, and then normally all I look forward to is having a Subway at lunch and then at night having a drink with friends. And it's just like, that's sad. I didn't want to do it. So I just quit. And I had a side business at the time, which is a really stupid side business, but I kind of used that as an excuse. I was like, yes, I'm going to quit that to follow my dreams. But
what was the side business?
We ran like pop-up stores, you know, fringe bar markets. It's kind of like we ran these pop-up stores inside the art house in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And then we actually had a place on Campbell Parade in Bondi, this bar that we just converted into a market over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then we stocked emerging design labels. But it's like it's not a good idea. Like it's not scalable. It was like far from profitable as well.
Got it.
But it kind of like, and it was such a stupid decision to have quit my job for that. But now that was like the biggest like life changer. And it was really great that it happened. My I quit my job. We've been doing that business for 6 months with business partners.
Hang on a second. Don't you have to commit to a cadetship?
Yeah, I did a cadetship with KPMG, which I broke to work at EY. They gave me this $18,000 allowance, which I broke.
Ernst and Young, which is the building next door to where I work at the radio station.
Yeah. So I quit that, and then so I had to pay back $18,000. And so meanwhile, my parents are on very low income. I'm there borrowing like $10,000 for that first business, borrowing $18,000. Not borrowing, they had just gave it to me to pay back KPMG, which is like. And then I had travel debts, and they just like pretty much gave me all of their disposable income, which I've just, then my business partner decided she didn't want to do it anymore within the first month of me quitting my job. She's been secretly like job hunting.
Oh.
So all of a sudden I was there. And then, so I'm stressed out about the fact that how my parents can pay for their mortgage because I've wasted all of their money, and now it's in the middle of the GFC, so I can't get another job. Then I walked out of – I left EY in such a – like a so long suckers
the kind of way. Glory, yeah.
Yeah, so I couldn't go asking for that back. And so no job, no business, no money, and that's why the only other option was to start another business.
Yeah. How did your parents take you quitting?
I didn't tell them. I couldn't tell them.
Hang on. Okay, wait a second. So you somehow got them to help you out of this financial situation because these people have committed to you for a cadetship, and there is a penalty if you leave the cadetship early. Mm. You somehow convinced your parents to help you out with that.
Yeah.
And then in the middle of that you go, all right, I'm going to leave. I'm going to do this pop-up shop. It's going to be great. I'm going to be Subi 2.0. It's going to be brilliant. And then it wasn't.
Yeah.
What the hell? How did you, were you living with them?
Yes. That made it so much worse. So I just pretended to go to work every day to EY, to Ernst & Young. So I would put on a suit. I would get up early. And there's nothing worse than having to get up early than being unemployed and having to get up early anyway. Get up early, put on a suit.
Bye, Mom. Bye, Dad.
Yeah, no, have breakfast with them and talk about, you know. And then my mom sometimes tries to get the bus with me because we used to do that. So get the bus into the city with my mom. I'm carrying around an empty laptop bag. And then, like, just, like, kind of wander the streets, go to the state library, try and go to, like, a cafe or something. And then even when I come home, I have to come home after them. So I had to, like, even if I was to go home during the day, I still have to step out and then come back. It was terrible.
Far out. So did you know what you wanted to do?
I managed it within one. So I got a job as a receptionist at a laser hair removal clinic in the meantime, and to have worked in, you know, a big four accounting firm in corporate finance, working on like multi-million dollar deals, which I didn't really understand or have any interest in, but still.
There's great coffee. Then, yeah, everyone's exactly. Dressed well.
Friday night drinks. Yeah. And suit. And then working at a laser hair removal clinic, and the bitch of a woman used to make me vacuum and tell me, point out all the spots I've missed. And then I remember the worst moment.
I'm in a business suit, goddammit.
Yeah. How dare
you? I don't have a tongue ring.
And then this woman, I was like working behind as a receptionist, and this girl comes in. She's like, oh, Jane, we went to school together. And so, you know, if you go to selective school, everyone gets a proper job and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, what are you doing here? And I never lie. I should have just said, this is my part-time job. I'm still studying or whatever. Like, or I'm just, no, still lying. But still, I told her, I'm just filling in for a friend. Which is the worst lie, because 5 weeks later when she comes back for her appointment, I'm still there and had nothing to say. And her judgmental Asian mom was there, and she must have, like, as soon as they left the front desk, would have been like, don't turn out like her. You know, like, you had that judgmental look.
Is it like the Fijian Telegraph with Audrey's folks? Like, did the judgmental Asian mom find a way to tell your mom? Or
no, thank God. Wow. No.
Wow, so... So you did get some income, so you were able to, you know, eat.
Yeah.
But what kept you going? What, like, it sounds like you were on this just absolute foot to the floor, V12, just let's go. This isn't for me. I'm jumping off, but I don't know where to.
Yeah.
That would have been very difficult to start keep your head above water. Did you question what the hell you were doing?
Oh, I was, I don't know how I got through it. It was the most depressing time of my life. And then, funnily enough, I was introduced to another girl by this Asian guy that my parents tried to set me up with.
From before?
Like, yeah. Like, we're not, like, we have nothing in common. We've just stayed in touch out of, like, courtesy. Not in a romantic way at all. Anyway, he introduced me to this other girl who also wanted to start a business. And so we did it. We started, we opened an online store. We, in 3 months, opened a bricks and mortar store in Broadway, which just like barely broke even. But still, like, that gave me a place to go to during the day and hope. And that was Shopo, but that's Shoponi at the time.
So what was the magic moment? I mean, you're sitting, you're behind the counter of this laser hair removal clinic. You're helping young women, you know, to make sure their bikini lines are intact. You know, zapping off mustaches. You're doing all this kind of, you know, it's a very important job. Yet coming from Ernst & Young and KPMG and the, you know, that kind of.
So that was the first place that's ever fired me because they said my heart wasn't in it.
Well, they were right.
Yeah, but I don't know how much heart you needed to have.
You got fired from being a receptionist at a laser hair removal clinic.
Yeah. So then I just worked full-time on the business.
Right.
For the first 6 months, I worked 7 days a week in the store. So, and so I was just working retail, which is also hard. Like, I don't have that much – I don't want this to sound like I have so much pride, but it was so demeaning to also have then work in this retail store. I've never worked retail before and have to – so I wasn't used to the fact that if someone comes in and you say hi and they're like, I'm just looking – it's like, okay, it's just like, can't not say hi to you. So what do you want? And then these, because we're opposite Sydney Uni, these girls come in and they're bargaining with you. They're like, can you take $10 off? I'm like, no. They're like, what if I buy two? I'm like, two is like a good amount to buy. I'm not giving you a discount. And it was just like, oh, I hated it. And then,
but it was your shop. So,
yeah. And then, so it was good. And then at some point I realized, So the difficulty of starting the business was that I also didn't have any money.
Yeah.
I think I was like $60,000 in debt. Like, a lot of it was helped by my parents, which I did pay back. But I had my hair because I had no money. I used my credit card to fund the entire thing. But the way I got through that was because we bought the stock on consignment, which was so lucky, which meant that you pay for the stock only after it's sold.
Yeah.
So I borrowed the samples from the supplier, took the photos.
Yeah.
Just hustled to get everything, photography and models for free. Built the website by myself by Googling HTML.
Yeah.
So it looked shit at the time, but you know, it did all right. And then just use Facebook. And I used to get in trouble for spending all my time at EY on Facebook. Because Facebook, EY was one of the only big companies that let you have Facebook.
Uh-huh.
And so I was just like, I would have fake spreadsheets open and I would be alt-tabbing just like as soon as someone walks by, I'm like, oh, spreadsheet. But I was on Facebook most of the time. So I knew how the ins and outs worked so well, and people used to make fun of me for being a Facebook addict because I was just spent on, like, you just waste your time trolling on it, right? Like, but yeah, it actually allowed me to have such a good understanding of it. And then I managed to kind of growth hack this big following on social media. And people just thought that we were much bigger than we were. And yeah, it was just, I had no money and we had a business.
So what was the, so you've bootstrapped a company on the back of a credit card.
Yeah.
You're flying by the seat of your pants on 18% interest on the credit card that's maxed out. What was the magic moment that you went, you know what, this might just work?
I actually bought out my business. So the business did kind of well and it started declining. With my business partner, the most we made a month is $22,000. But towards the end, it was like, it was December and it was $5,000 a month. Like, December's meant to be your busiest trade, right? Because it's Christmas, party dresses. We did $5,000, which is like about two orders a day. So she wanted to get out and she, we amicably went our own ways. I bought the business out for $20,000 cash. I just gave her a wad of cash. And then come January 3rd, 2012, the business was all mine. And then from that moment on, I just like hustled. And I didn't do, it wasn't one thing in particular, but I just started doing everything. Just like decisions got made quicker. I did things my way. And so the next month we did $9,000 and then we did 41 and then 71.
Jesus, in 3 months.
150. Yeah, we just kept doubling month on month.
Holy moly.
And at this point, I think we had an 80, for the $71,000 a month, I was doing everything by myself, packing the orders, taking the photos, buying the stocks, just marketing, customer service. And I remember I was like, so every day it's like you're just constantly writing out orders because I used to write thank you, personal handwritten thank you notes. And I get to the post box and the post box, I fill it up and it's full. So I have to speed to the next suburb, to the, that post box, fill that up. That was full. And I was like, screw it, I'm going to wait for the postman. And I think that was the moment I was like, shit, I'm onto something. This is gonna. This could actually work.
You're waiting for the van, the pickup van, so you just want to put it all in there rather than shoving it down in the post box.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, so that was the big aha, first big aha moment, I think.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Oh man, I'm thrilled. Now, you're a very busy woman. I was supposed to have you for an hour. It's coming up on 12:20. Where do you have to be? Where?
Oh no, I'm. It's cool.
Are you sure?
I'm the boss.
I don't want to keep you.
No, it's fine. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you very, very much. Guys, I'd love to talk to you about another 15 minutes.
Yeah,
sure. If that's okay. Okay. So what I'm getting is that you have equated enormous, complete, like scalable financial success to I'm Jane, I'm in control of every decision. At what point do you go, I'm going to have to relinquish some of these decisions because I'm running out of bandwidth? How hard was that? Who did you choose?
So it was, I was so reluctant to let go, and not just because of control, that's a big part of it, but I was just so stingy because I was so povo for so long in the lead up to this, you know.
It's the best word. For people listening overseas, povo is poverty.
Yeah.
I was in such poverty. Such like, poverty. You know, you're going overseas up the front? No, povo, I'm in economy class. Yeah.
Have you seen that YouTube video of the two guys explaining all the, like, povo, avo?
Yeah, just half the word you think it is with an O or an E sound at the end of it.
Yeah, Australia.
Yeah, you swing by the servo for the Barbie, the servo?
Yeah.
What?
My mom just doesn't understand Australians sometimes. Yeah, but so was my mom. Yeah,
so, the first employee.
So I remember minimum wage was $5.70 when I worked at McDonald's. So I was expecting that. Like, that's just what I had in my mind. Minimum wage is like $20, over $20. So I was like, wow, I'm not going to pay someone $20. Because my effective pay at KPMG was like $10 an hour as well. So like, I'm not going to pay someone $23 an hour to do work that I can do much better. And then I'm going to have to take time to explain it to them, which I just didn't even have. So I just kept pushing it off, putting it off for so long. And the thing that made me actually hire my first staff was that a few months ago when I still had my business partner and business wasn't doing well, I booked this trip to Miami for Ultra Music Festival with a bunch of friends. And so I already committed, already paid, and the festival came around and I was seriously considering staying back and just focusing on the business. And then I got peer pressured to just come on the trip and hire someone, which I did. And it actually was such a big move because it moved the business from a small one-man operation to being a company that had, you know, systems and had room for growth. And I was able to start actually working on the business rather than getting into this cycle of being trapped in just working in the business.
Thank you, dance music. Thank you. I stood there with my glow stick on South Beach and I went, you know what?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, Dad raving to Skrillex was a big life-changing moment.
At what point did you tell your parents the real story?
So I told them 2 years later.
Shut up!
Yeah, I was playing it really safe. I wanted to get it to a point where I knew I wasn't going to go bankrupt. It was a moment when I was like, okay, worst case scenario, I've got enough stock there to sell to, like, even if I had to liquidate to, like, keep me going for a few years. So I took them up to Centrepoint Tower because it was very, like, you know, I thought it was a good grand gesture to the restaurant. And then I told them I quit my job in July. And they thought I meant July the year before, but I was like, no, it's July 2 years ago. And they just didn't believe it. They were like, how did you have the balls to do that? How did you lie for that long? How did you Like, how did you do it? Because we haven't ever taught that to you. It's just not in, like, because they're not entrepreneurial at all. And they were like, we don't take risks. How did you have the balls to take risks like that? And I told them, like, they immigrated from Australia, like, from China. They, like, left everything they knew to a country where they didn't speak the language, still don't. And they just gave up everything they knew and took a much bigger risk. And I think it's much harder to take risks when you have a kid as well.
Were they mad?
They were just shocked and in awe. And, you know, by this point, I bought them a car.
There you go. Yeah, look at the shiny thing.
Yeah.
It's lovely. Yeah. Some addresses paid for that.
Yeah. They recognize brands like, BMW. Okay. No, it was the cheap. It's the cheapest BMW. It was like a $50,000. Like,
shh, still a BMW. $50,000 is still a lot of money, Jane.
No, but I know. But my dad was too scared to. He's really nervous. He didn't want to drive it into work because he didn't want his like colleagues and work bosses to know. But I'm like, you can actually afford that car on your own salary. Like, why would you? He would drive the old car into work. He doesn't anymore.
Wow.
We convinced him to.
Wow. You came right. You weren't alone by any means. You were growing in the online fashion business at the same time as many players, some a lot bigger than you.
Yeah.
Why has ShowPony managed to ShowPo? Why have you managed to stay where you are? What's the secret behind that?
Being completely honest, there's something there that I don't really know because I think we're doing everything well. We have great products. We have great prices. There's definitely things we're doing wrong. Like I feel like the website has a lot of problems. It's not as good as a lot of our competitors. We have issues with photography, but there's so many things that I can see we're not doing well and we're working on it, but I don't know how it's just exploded and it's managed to stay, like, to keep growing. And we've grown, I mean, we have a great social media strategy, but that's just, you know, we've never outsourced for that. We just all love social media and we've just played with it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think there's a certain, like, for girls in our demographic, when they look at our company, there's something aspirational to being, I think we said, like, we're kind of like positive role models because we're, you know, it's a group of, we have men that work with us, but it's a group of very like successful girls. Like all the girls with us are so smart and they're, you know, they're such good ambassadors for the brand. Like the girls that actually work with us.
The energy coming off your table at that ball last year, I could not believe.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe.
And everyone's friends.
Power coming out of that table.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
That's so good.
Yeah, It was great. And so what kind of work, obviously having been in that, you know, that with that film, The Man in the Grey Linen Suit, the grey flannel suit, sorry, you know, the drone amongst worker bees in the tall skyscraper, your experience there at Ernst & Young, sitting in the cubicle with your brain melting away. I'm guessing what about that experience motivated you to, you know, how did that experience influence the workplace that you've created now?
I think for us, we've always hired people that we like, and I think that's important. And there's no bitchiness as well, which you can find a lot in big companies where there's a lot of women and there's just no bitchiness where we work.
That's a real pity that happens.
Yeah. That there's no bitchiness? No, I'm joking.
No, the bitchiness happens. Don't worry, guys cut each other off at the ankles all the bloody time. But it's kind of less of a...
Yeah, it's at least not behind your back.
Maybe.
And then so we have like at EY, like if you're tired, I remember when I used to work long hours because I'm working on the side business I had at night and then at EY till like sometimes like midnight during the during work days. If I get really tired, I would go into the bathroom, set myself a 5-minute alarm and just like nap in the toilet. At ShowPo, we have a bed.
Awesome.
So you can just go like nap there whenever you want. And so we have like our work hashtag is the ShowPo drinking team because that's what we're all about. I think we actually interview people. We're like, do you drink? I mean, we're not going to actually discriminate against someone that doesn't, but I think it's...
Oh, good, because I don't. So.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, we don't, but I think it's like we want them to know that that's the culture from the interview, because I think when you're interviewing with a company, you're interviewing them as well. We want them to know that we want to be open, like, share your weekends with us, share what you do, like, share your problems. Like, we...
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's a really open culture. People don't... You know, I think for a while, I think everyone knows I'm the boss now. For a while, we've had girls who start with us who thought, like, this one girl thought I was 19. I was like, oh, that's very nice. But they just thought I was some junior. They don't realize I'm the boss because I don't want to give that air off. And so, yeah, it's a really flat structure. I mean, there's not that many of us. Of course, it's quite flat. But,
yeah,
it's not like Devil Wears Prada.
Though it doesn't take much for a workplace to become that. You know, as well as I do, that it only takes one new employee or one particular crisis to bring out parts of people that you may not.
We definitely made that mistake last year. We hired three people. There were three people that we fired them now, but we definitely had people that you can tell how much one bad egg could be. Like impact the entire workplace. Yeah. Like you are as strong as your weakest link, right? And that's just 100% true.
Yeah.
But we just fired them. It's great. You can pick and choose who you work with, right? I have to deal with like idiots.
What would you say, like Gigi's 12, all right? She's just started high school. Up until about, she's taller than you. She's nearly as tall as me.
Wow.
Yeah. She's stunning. Kills me. I'm in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
So until about
put a tracker on her.
Until about 6 weeks ago, she wanted to be was a Victoria's Secret angel. All right. And then the other day we kept kind of explaining to her that, you know, the model's a good, you know, it's a fantastic profession, but it'll last 2 years if you're really lucky.
Yeah.
You're gonna have to have something to back it up. And we're like, you know how what's her face? She has Quora and she has Swarovski and, you know, so what's the business that you're going to build on the back of that?
Yeah.
And just the other day she goes, I think I'm going to go study business at university.
That's great.
And I just went, phew, but inside.
Yeah.
But what would you say to a young, I mean, she's 12. I reckon she might be the last generation ever to have to learn how to drive a car.
Yeah.
You know, the workplace she's going to enter in 6 years from now will look nothing like
we can
possibly, you know, conceive. But what would you say to a young woman like that as she's, you know, launching into high school and, you know, what would you say to her for the next, you know, years ahead?
I think just to have an interest in everything and just be a sponge in those years. Like you learn so much during those years that actually can be so helpful. Like don't ride yourself off and think, oh, science, that's not for me. I'm not going to. Like you're so young that you want to just kind of be open to everything and just give everything a go. Because I grew up having a fear of failure, going to a selective school. Like you don't try if you know you might fail. So I just think try everything and just enjoy your adolescence, you know? Don't compare yourself. Don't be hard on yourself. It's so hard to tell a teenage girl that because that's what you're constantly doing. But, you know, I think it's just to build yourself up to be a strong woman, like to believe in yourself. That's actually so hard because women, I find, are so much more – I always get asked why there's more male entrepreneurs. And I think because women don't back themselves. They question themselves and they don't – take those risks. And actually, funnily enough, I was watching Top Model and they actually have a segment challenge now where they ask them, how are you going to turn your modeling into a business?
Yes.
Yeah.
So just talk to me about backing yourself a bit.
I just think what you mean, like...
Well, you know, for people that might be a completely foreign concept to them. Very, you know, maybe it's the way they're brought up. Maybe they were the one girl in a family full of boys. Maybe, you know, that kind of patriarchal upbringing that people didn't do it deliberately but has kind of rubbed off on them and, you know, societal expectations are that, I don't know, you're going to have a very different life to your brother.
Yeah.
What would you say to a woman that would be like, oh, it's easy for you to back yourself?
Yeah.
You know, you're, you know, the fired up, fire in your belly,
yeah.
you know, Jane, you know, multi-million dollar company, you know, you built it from the ground up, but I couldn't possibly do that. What would you say to someone like that?
I didn't think I was that person at all. You know, like I was just a mediocre, a really bad accountant, hating accounting at KPMG and EY. And I think sometimes you just need to give yourself that push because there is actually nothing – like, yes, it's scary to think I'm going to try and fail. But look, like, I think about the fact that I could be a 50-year-old accountant hating my accounting job when I'm 50. Like, that is so much scarier, being trapped in that, than just to have a go when you're young and fail. Like, what's wrong with that?
Fail fast, fail early,
yeah.
Fail often, fail forward.
Yeah, I did succeed.
all that good stuff.
Yeah.
All that good stuff. I'm so grateful to have you over here. Final question. Because it is about, it's a cultural thing that I wasn't really exposed to.
Hmm.
What would you say to teenagers who are listening to this that really related to your description of extraordinarily high parental expectations? Mm. What would you say to people who are maybe like 15, 16 listening now?
I think you can still keep your parents happy and push yourself to do both. Like, so make sure, like, I always tell whenever I'm in a cab driver with an Asian cab driver, I'm like, and because then they're like, they're so impressed that I went to a selective school and because it gets brought up because they're Asian. And I'm like, no, but make sure your child goes and plays sports, gets a part-time job. They're like, no, I work hard so my kid doesn't have to get a part-time job. It's like, no, all of that is character building. So I think don't push the boundaries with your parents, but that doesn't mean stop studying. Still study. Like, I feel like something, you know, don't use this as there's a cop-out, an exit from working hard academically, but push against your parents because they don't know best. They really just don't.
Wow. I love it. And if they ever have a problem, just show Jane's photo.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's like the most that's the most flattering thing. I've had so many people who've come up to me and they said that their parents, they tell their parents they want to do this and their parents are like, no, that's impossible. You can't do that. And they show their parents my article. Their parents they can't fault it. They can't argue against it. So that's actually, I feel like that's so good to have made an impact. So,
I love it. I love, because here's the thing. So Audrey's dad, he's just retired, came here in 1987, so 29 years ago, after the coup in Fiji, zip. Zero.
Yeah.
Nada. Wife, two young kids. He retired 2 weeks ago with a house he owns here, a house he owns in Brisbane, a big fuck off boat, and enough money to last him and his wife till the end. And I love it.
Yeah.
I love it because so much shit is said about immigrants in our society. And there's so much bitterness, I think, towards people that others don't understand.
Yeah.
But Jamie had the same amount of hours in the day as everybody else.
Yeah.
And look what he's done, you know? And so when, you know, and I was actually going to wonder about this. So how old were you in 2005?
2005, I would have been 19.
So when
21. No.
So when all that shit was going down in Cronulla, how did that make you feel?
Yeah.
There was like to explain to other people, like there was a race riots in Cronulla. It was like an enormous, like incredibly bigoted racist white people just bashing poor young Middle Eastern boys and screaming, if you don't love it, leave and fuck off, we're full. And it's like total redneck.
I just can't believe that happened in this day and age. Like it was still a long time ago, but.
But you're a kid. You're not even here for 10 years at that, or maybe
I would have been it would have been the year after high school.
Yeah.
I would have just started working KPMG.
Did it make you feel unsafe? Did it make you feel?
Didn't make me feel unsafe. I was actually, I felt very Australian by this stage and I just was embarrassed.
Right, okay.
For Australia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was just like, I can't believe, I don't want people to perceive us like this.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah.
Yeah, they do, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Dumb, drunk and racist, I think that's the.
Yeah.
It's a real shame, man. It's a real shame because, you know, I mean, what's that? I love it. I say it all the time. There's that fantastic saying, we all have the same amount of hours in the day as Beyonce.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
We do.
Yeah.
It's not like she's got some sort of secret time portal.
Yeah.
She is the same, you know, 10 fingers and toes. What has she got different? She's got commitment. She's got commitment to work on what she was born with. She wasn't born singing and dancing like that.
Yeah.
She worked her ass off to sing and dance like that.
Yeah.
She worked her ass off to learn the business. She worked her ass off to learn relationships, which is what we'll get out on. How important have all the relationships in those that Facebook thing you were doing at Ernst & Young, how important was all those relationships, all that stuff, how do they continue to be important to you?
You mean?
Personal relationships, relationships with suppliers, relationships with, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's so important. Like, you know, in terms of relationship with my staff, I think that's when people always ask me, will you sell the business? No, because this is exactly what I want to do. There's no way I would leave. The relationship with suppliers, like we go out like and we have such good relationships. We hang out with our suppliers. And like, you just know, I think we rarely sign contracts for anything because you never want to be trapped into a relationship that it's not mutually beneficial. So you would not... Like if we've had situations where we've been contracted and we've told that person, look, this doesn't work for us anymore, and we can get out because you have a good relationship and you want to look at things in the long term. And I think, you know, I think that's definitely something that, like you said, like one of the things that Showpost done well that I can't quite put my fingers on, I think. It all adds up.
So you're saying you run a multi-million-dollar business on handshake deals?
Yeah, a lot of it, yes.
That says volumes.
Volumes
about the trust that goes on between everybody that's involved.
My best employee is my best friend that we only met at work, and she doesn't have an employment contract, and she writes everyone else's employment contracts that I don't even read because I don't like reading.
Yeah. That says a lot. That says a lot about... the enrollment that everybody has in the mutual success of what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I think that might be the secret sauce
that
you're looking for. But when you find it, let me know.
I will.
I'm so grateful you could come over. Thank you so much, Jane.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm stoked. I'm going to take your photo, okay?
Yeah.
Sweet. Thanks.
That was Jane Liu. You can find her at The Lazy CEO on both Twitter and Instagram. I can't thank her enough for that fantastic story. So I hope you heard something in there that resonates with you. Certainly something about how hard you want to work to make something you believe in come true and how hard you want to quit if something you're doing isn't ticking your clock. I really related to her story of sitting at the desk just going, I've been here for 4 hours and what have I done? Because I've certainly had jobs like that. And... yeah, I hope that you heard something there that resonates with you and that you can make your week a little better because of it. I have to thank Andy Marr for producing the show and Toe Hider for the music each and every week. And thank you so much for getting in touch. I'm getting some really fabulous video messages coming through on Snapchat and people are being really kind on email. Send osheremail@gmail.com. It's always helpful to hear your feedback and I'm really grateful that what me and Andy are doing here is resonating with you. So, hey, thanks so much. Have a great week. I look forward to talking with you next week. Hopefully, I have another fantastic female entrepreneur on the show next week because, you know, you can't be what you can't see. And I want Gigi to be able to see that the possibilities for her are endless in this world. All right. I love you. Thank you so much for listening. Until I speak to you next time, sleep well and dream of beautiful things.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.